Hey everyone, this is Carlos Morales, and this is the Think About Now podcast. Now, originally today, I was going to be releasing a conversation I had a little while back with my friend Yaakov on the topic of Judaism and the no-state solution as far as Israel is concerned, and I was thinking of doing some little small discussion on the recent inauguration of Donald Trump, but honestly, the discussion of Trump and the real change of power right now is deserving of a little bit longer conversation and thought than merely a one-minute intro to a show that has nothing to do with him whatsoever. I would be remiss and irresponsible from the perspective of someone who does a philosophy, politics, and history show without discussing what is undoubtedly the largest conversation in American history, the rise of Donald Trump to the position of president. And it has to be the largest conversation in history because never has communication been so wide before. We can read essentially what's going on in people's heads at any given moment due to things like tweets, Facebook, Instagram, and everything else. And of course, everyone and their mom owning a blog website. And I'll be honest, I have had to kind of think about this at a number of different angles. Obviously, we've done a lot of episodes on things like free trade, anarchism, Hillary Clinton, the very nature of politics as a whole. And this is actually the fourth or fifth attempt of mine at recording this introduction and actually talking about this particular topic. Actually, here are some outtakes from some of the other recordings.
You fascist!
These social justice war pussy Nazi! So, as you can tell, there's been a little bit of frustration with both sides of the aisle. So there's this window, right, by which most people view the world. There are concepts that people attach to, attach themselves to, that they kind of see the world through, right? Ideas like privilege, outrage, oppression, race, sex, gender, religion, etc. And the last year and a half has been a strengthening of those rigid yet very hard to define definitions. So those who oppose Trump are snowflakes, liberals, degenerates, PC police, non-pragmatic, anti-American lunatics who want to burn down Western civilization. Those who are for Trump are anti-American, racist, misogynist, Nazi lunatics who want to burn down Western civilization. My frustration comes in the lack of dialogue, authenticity, honesty, and intrigue in these conversations. You know, it's not a shock to anyone that I was and am not for a Trump presidency, and I haven't lightened my stance on it. I haven't really seen any of his recent policies as a sign of freedom to come. What I have seen are people arguing that Trump should have more power to do the things necessary, without recognizing that once Trump, of course, leaves office, the next guy will then have those nice new powers, and he can do with them whatever he wants. You know, the same thing that happened with Obama. Closing borders, restricting trade, imposing tariffs, making veiled threats at a number of countries, including those to the south and those to the east. It's certainly not inspiring in any way. And what's been interesting, though, is that, you know, In this frustration on both sides, I believe and still kind of believe that this was and is the perfect time to open up people's minds to discussion of anarchism, agorism, libertarianism, you know, whatever you'd like to call the voluntary exchange of goods and ideas, free from coercion and respect for, you know, things like self-ownership and, you know, a love for the goodness of man. So I kind of said, you know, hey, guys, why don't we stop, you know, crapping on the left for not being consistent for just a moment so we can have a conversation. I mean, I saw so many posts by libertarians and narco-capitalists, whatever that term means in these cases, essentially just making fun of the left. Oh, well, you guys didn't get mad at Obama when he did this. Oh, well, you're all being overreactive, whiny, and making too big a deal out of this. Well, literally at the same time saying that taxation is rape and chattel slavery. Right? If you don't see the irony there, while you're talking on your cell phone, driving around in the car, and being able to eat whenever you want, and comparing that to, you know, chattel slavery, well, it's hard to take your ability for self-reflection and empathy very seriously. And in all honesty, although we can call people out for being overreactive, we don't have to wait for fascism to be at the front door to call it out. So in an attempt to open up the door, I started watching these protests and going to the women's marches and trying to take it all in, right? I went out to LA, saw some stuff over there. In San Diego, saw some of the airport protests. Airport protests, by the way, huge fan of those. Pretty cool. Now, in regards to the women's protests, you know, it's easy to kind of generalize if you're looking at it from an outside perspective, right? You just go, look at these adorable little women who want nothing more than for blood money to pay to kill babies. And though it's easy to do that, it's not actually what I saw. Well, there was a little bit, right? It's not all virtue and integrity. It was vagina hats, not this pussy kitty cat signs with no real purpose, no KKK chants, Islam is awesome, kill the cops, increase school funding, Trump is going to put gays into camps, and a number of signs that said Trump is a pussy, which I guess that's empowering vaginas. I always try to understand that one. If vaginas are good, then you're calling Trump a good thing. Anyway, I'm at a loss. So yeah, there was some of that, certainly. And you know, in my mind, I thought, hey, there is a chance for dialogue, right, in all this. And I did meet some earnest individuals with kind of fascinating perspectives, but they were a tiny minority. To be fair, though, they're always a minority in a group, whether you're in a libertarian group, or an anarchist group, or anything. Their novelty and minority status is actually what makes them interesting in the first place to us. What bothered me, though, was this kind of nonchalant call for civil war. Now, and I saw this a lot. People would just kind of say, we got to take up arms against the government. Although a lot of times they don't quite use the term weapons because that's scary to them. Yet they think that we should use force to take over a freely elected president. Which, hey, you know, libertarians are calling for that a while back. I wasn't. Because I realize that civil war generally doesn't lead to a really nice situation. And when I saw these people talking about civil war, a lot of them were these white college kids who'd never had jobs. And I thought, man, privilege. I mean, to use their line, right? Because I'm doubting any of them had been to war, you know, had a friend or a loved one die by a government agent, had you know, lost a kid to a drone, or really had to struggle. When I see a kid joking about killing cops and taking down the government, I can't help think, but he kind of thinks that black kids are going to do all the cop killing for him, right? Because he's not going to really get down there, is he? Unless in some kind of romantic thought that he's suddenly going to know how to use a weapon. Because there's this kind of view that's shared between catastrophist doomsday right wingers and the growing insurrection left, right? It's that in the end, they're going to be fine. When the bombs burst, their brothers, mothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, their children, they're not going to get blown up. Their arm isn't going to get blown off. They're not going to end up with a piece of scrap metal getting lodged in their leg and infected. They're not going to catch a disease from the spoiled food remains that are left over. Nope. They're going to simply watch over the catastrophe. And by the way, somehow the result of the Civil War will be a better world for them. Not sure if they've ever studied any revolution, but in general, tyranny wins and then maintains for a long period of time. And so, as you can tell, I'm in this position where, man, trying to find partners to the right and the left, it's getting more and more difficult in this struggle. Because what has occurred is, but on both sides, there is a statement that debate is over. I mean, you'll see this in the protests constantly. The time for debate is over. I don't have to answer to you. I don't need to give you an explanation for anything. And if you start really bringing up specific ideas, a lot of times you can be cast out and thrown aside. And yeah, the right was doing it too. And I will still say they are doing it. You know, there's still this notion that if you kind of talk about how bad Trump is, someone is immediately going to bring up how bad Hillary Clinton was. And God knows, I did a lot of work against Hillary Clinton. A lot. I mean, did a lot of podcasting writing against Bernie Sanders, the whole left. So it's this assumption that you have to pick one or the other, which is pure tribalism. And though I can kind of empathize on some aspects, the topic of tribes, right? That's the notion of how our brains work. We're tribalistic in nature. It's how we've maintained and prospered for such a long period of time. It is pure fast twitch muscle fiber thinking. In between information coming in and the response, there's a time for thinking. And that window gets shorter and shorter and shorter the more frustrated and angry you become. And when you decide that everyone on the opposite side of the aisle is truly evil, truly calling for genocide, whether the right saying that the left is calling for white genocide, or of course the left is saying that the right wingers want to kill essentially everyone except white men and women. I remain that to have seen that from most right wingers, by the way. That's a pretty small amount of them. Once you create that oppression, then anything can be justified afterwards. So you can start justifying pepper spraying people for talking. You can start justifying killing other individuals, right? And this categorization, demonization, then rationalization allows one to feel oppressed and then immediately allowed to use force, which has always led to terrible results. And this is what happened with the rise of Trump. Stephen Molyneux, Walter Block, a number of other libertarians were essentially saying that white men were being oppressed and that we needed a strong leader to take over to prevent the decline and destruction of Western civilization. They went from an intellectual conversation to arguing for absolute most limbic system, lizard brain, innate, violent will to get what they wanted. Rationality is over. The time for discussion is over. Reason will not win. We must use force. People like Steph have actually stated this, right? They can't really use reason to argue we're out of this, so we're going to have to start using force. And then on the left, I have leftist libertarian friends who are calling for violence to be used in these cases, and they believe it's a defensive reaction. And guess what, folks? In both cases, they're kind of right. They're kind of right. There is a war out there against the individual. It's been going on for quite some time, and it'll continue to go on as long as we're justifying government in any way whatsoever. To create, though, this horizontal violence structure where we're attacking one another through labeling, categorizing, demonizing, and then justifying whether that person that we're calling the enemy is a fascist, a socialist, an SJW, we are killing the dialogue completely. And in that, those who are seeking to attain power, who want power, get it. Because a vacuum is created, a vacuum where there should have been dialogue and reason and discussion. And in that vacuum, when those things are lost, integrity, authenticity, and honesty are all lost at the same time as well. So we get into this situation where it makes sense to have a dramatic and violent leader rule over us because we're at war, in a war with animals. That's what Nazis are. They're animals. They are the cartoon villain. We are at war with communists, the other cartoon villain, right? With Islam, with multiple types of cultures that are outside of our own, right? These are a cartoon villain. We need a large government to kind of destroy this. And I got to tell you, folks, in the very end, you don't win, right? The individual, the one who's working outside of the government, who's simply trying to live a good life with integrity, they don't win in the end when it comes to war. Instead, their village is pillaged, whether through taxation or literal war, where people actually come to their homes and actually destroy their lives. That's what you're arguing for when you're arguing for war. You're arguing for death. You're arguing for hate. And though you may be able to say this is all being defensive, it's always been defensive to kill government agents then. It's always been a right to kill a bunch of cops. It's always been a right to kill the DMV worker because they're also taking part in this system. It's also okay to kill the Postal Service worker. It's also okay to kill the veteran who was in the Vietnam War because at some point they used force and benefited from a totalitarian system, which allowed them to prosper due to the fact that at some point there was taxation. Right? This is where empathy and understanding have to take a foothold, or else anything can be justified when the oppression is considered eternal. When terms like systematic or institutionalized are being used, it means that the only way that they can be changed is not through dialogue, but through violence. And then it's the actual structural violence known as government, which is then called for and used. When we label others as evil, I'm not talking about pedophiles or full-on rapists or serial killers. I'm talking about the normal Joe from Arizona who voted for Trump. When we label these people as evil, we immediately cut down the dialogue, because these people who are evil, they are not capable of redemption in the third act. They're not capable of being the phoenix that rises from the ashes and changes. No, because they are evil to the core and they must be punished immediately. And this only perpetuates and continues the cycle of abuse that is a large part of our society. Not just governmental towards the individual, but also within the familial family structure. And as long as we believe that individuals should be punished continuously for beliefs that they held in the past, and that they are not capable of love and understanding in the future, well, if you're not ideological enough to believe that human beings can at some point become good, what the fuck are you doing trying to make change in the world in the first place? What is the point of life if not to believe that things can change for the better in the end? Why bother waking up tomorrow if you don't believe that in some way you can bring a benefit to existence? What's the point of arguing if goodness will never arise from it? What is the point of having conversations or attempting to change other individuals' minds if you believe that those people are evil? What is the chance that humanity can have a large redemption in the third act? If you continuously say that these people who held views differently than you will never be able to change. I'm sure glad not everyone thought that about me. I was the Child Protective Services guy. I was just checking in actually recently, and it was 5 years ago today that I started working for Child Protective Services. I did a lot of terrible actions, justified by society and by myself, that I believed I was doing right by working for the government. And I wasn't, right? And I came to understand that. And libertarians are willing to have conversations with me, and people are willing to have these ideas discussed. But if everyone decided to give up on me as just some evil state worker, well, I certainly wouldn't be having this conversation with you right now. I'd still be that worker, or I'd be just some sad, depressed mope who, with frustration, never really figured out what to do with it. Never figured out that I was capable of some form of redemption and that I could help other individuals through love and empathy and caring and fighting and honesty and integrity. I think many of us are capable of that, because many of us have been on the other side arguing for that which was wrong. But we got out of it, and so can they. It's not time to give up on humanity. In fact, now it's the time for the exact opposite. Do not let the gears and levers of frustration and violence monopolize and take up rent in your mind for free. For every moment of every day is a time for learning and change and progress. But we must will it to be true. This certainly won't be the last time we talk about Donald Trump on this show. He's president now. I know that things always get a little bit bad before they get better. But it doesn't mean that I need to treat people badly and even worse in the future. In the same way I had to empathize with who I was in the past to love myself now and be the change I want to see in the world, I have to extend that empathy with others so that hopefully things can get better in the end as well. Hate is a lack of creativity and ingenuity and is at the forefront of the destruction of the human will for change and greatness. And so we must move past that hate and empathize and see ourselves in those who we decide to cast away to truly embody the beauty that human beings are capable of, not only in ourselves, but to project that outwards so that we can create a better, new world. Shadows settle on the place that you left. Our minds are troubled by the emptiness. Destroy the middle, it's a waste of time. From the perfect start to the finish line. And if you're still breathing, you're the lucky ones. 'Cause most of us are heaving through corrupted lungs, setting fire to our insides for fun, collecting names of the lovers that went wrong, the lovers that went wrong.